There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 933. This episode brought to you by Dollar Shave Club. You know, with thousands of athletes going for the gold right now, it has me thinking, with all that Dollar Shave Club has been doing lately, as the clear champions of the bathroom, they deserve some kind of a gold medal. At least, maybe you could just mash all of your beard scrapings together into the shape of a medal, because DollarShaveClub.com delivers everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. It's more than just razors. They have everything. Everything you need to look, smell, and feel your best. Shampoo, body wash, toothpaste, and of course, the best razors in the business. Join Dollar Shave Club today for just $5 with free shipping. You'll get their Shit Shower Shave Starter Set. It has the 6-blade executive razor, plus trial sizes of shave butter, body cleanser, and one wipe Charlie's. Then keep the blades coming for a few bucks more a month. Get yours at dollarshaveclub.com/ID10T. That's ID, the number 10, and T. Thank you to Dollar Shave Club for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. Let's look at the ID10T community corkboard. These are things happening in your community. Katie Levine, just like old times, what do we got?
Gabriel writes, I'm a social worker in Northwest Alabama volunteering with my local library's teen program. Many of our attendees have expressed a great deal of interest in starting a D&D campaign, and we would definitely like to help them. As I also volunteer with TakeThis.org, I'm well acquainted with the therapeutic and mental benefits of role-playing games, especially with adolescents. I have started a GoFundMe page to help provide dice and players manuals for the teens, as well as to get some RPG-related items for the library. To find out more or to donate, please search Public Library Teen RPG on GoFundMe.com.
Great.
And then Spencer writes, I wanted to tell you about my wonderful wife who has, for the first time in her life, made her own artwork for sale. She has spent years working very hard at day jobs and has finally decided to give it a go at being a professional artist. I'm so very proud of her. Her site is called OutInTheWildArt.com, and she sells her own prints, originals, and pet portraits. She does all of this from Portland, and he says, I think she is so talented, and I hope you would too. So go to outinthewildart.com.
Hashtag PDX. Also, I'll be performing at Levity Live and Oxnard Comedy Club this weekend with Mike Furman and April Richardson. That is Feb 24-25. Go to levitylive.com for tickets. This podcast is Natalie Portman, who is just all kinds of rad. She's promoting Annihilation, which is in theaters February 23rd, which is a stunning movie that you should watch. And in general, she's just great. She was just on SNL again, did another rap, was hilarious, and is every bit as nice and cool as you would hope she would be. It was very cool of her to... We recorded this at the Roosevelt Hotel because she was doing Kimmel. So she popped over to the Roosevelt Hotel because it was going to be too loud at the Kimmel show with their getting ready to tape the show. So she came over and we did a podcast, and she was awesome. So thanks to Natalie Portman for doing this episode. Definitely go see Annihilation. It is in theaters February 23rd. This episode also brought to you by Squarespace. The future is coming. Make it brighter with Squarespace. Make a website. Don't just rely on social media. The ever-changing algorithms of social media could tank your business. So just have a home base. Go to Squarespace. Blog or publish content. Sell product services of all kinds. Announce any upcoming event or special project. You're going to get beautiful templates by world-class designers. Powerful e-commerce functionality. You can sell anything you want. That's legal. The ability to customize look, feel, settings, products, and more with just a few clicks. Everything optimized for mobile right out of the box. You can buy domains, choose from over 200 extensions, and analytics that help you grow in real time. You have built-in SEO, free and secure hosting, and nothing to patch or upgrade ever. And you're going to get 24/7 award-winning customer support. Make it stand out. Stand out with a beautiful website. Check out squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, just use the offer code ID10T to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Thanks to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of the ID10T podcast. Also, Audible, Get on the Audible train. Audiobooks are great. They can, you know, if you're sitting in traffic, if you're on public transportation, if you're working out, whatever it is that you're doing, if you're at a job that you're not enjoying, just put the headphones in your ear, listen to a book. You can learn anything you want. You can get healthier. I just listened to a book called Ego is the Enemy by Ryan Holiday. I highly recommend it for anyone. Well, I think anyone and everyone is susceptible to being destroyed by their own ego. So it's a great, great listen. And Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audible.com/ID10T and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. Download a title for free. Start listening. It is that easy. Membership includes one free audiobook a month, exclusive sales, and 30% off all regularly priced books. There are free apps for iPhone, iPad, Android, and Windows Phone. And unlike a streaming or rental service, you own your books with Audible. So, audible.com/ID10T or text ID10T to 500-500 to get started today. Thanks to Audible for sponsoring this podcast. Episode number 933 with Natalie Portman. Katie, you're on!
Initiating ID10T protocol.
Doing this.
My pleasure.
It's a soft intro. There's no like, and here we are now.
Perfect.
It's just too oppressive when you have to like go into show mode.
Yeah.
So you're already, we're at the Roosevelt Hotel just for, there's been a yapping dog situation outside.
Interesting.
We don't know if a dog lost its owner if it is just getting drunk by the pool, but there has been every so often like a yap outside, and it's like it's a purse dog. Like
that sounds sad.
Well, I don't know.
But maybe it's just obnoxious.
It's a little because Katie is a dog rescuer and volunteers. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
I'll tell you if there was a dog even remotely in danger, the headphones would come off Katie and she would literally leap off the balcony.
Okay, that's good to know. That's good to know.
Save, like whatever is going on.
I like it.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Fighting something off for the past 3 weeks or so, but you know.
Well, it's hard to believe that during a crazy press cycle where you're traveling all over the place and talking to a lot of people that you might catch something.
Oh, God. Knock on wood. I'm so like, yeah. Anyway, a little neurotic about it.
But you also have kids, so don't you just get everything because your kids get...
Which is very confusing to me because aren't they... People are always like, oh, they're building their immune systems,
right.
So that's why they get sick all the time. And then you're like, why do I get sick all the time?
They're helping you build your immune
like,
system.
Like, didn't I do this?
Yeah.
Or... What's your... Yeah, I don't know.
I have a friend with three kids and he's just always on. He's like, one of them's always got something. So he's just nonstop, just on antibiotics.
So rough. It's a lot, but it's wonderful. You have
zero kids.
You have zero kids.
Well, I've only been married a year and a half.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And so we're, you know, my wife and I are like, we're looking maybe about a year down the road.
Nice.
I think.
You're like one more year of no colds.
I know. Just colds when our friends with kids get colds.
Right, exactly. And come over.
Yeah, we're just trying to, you know, really just squeeze all of the last juice of like, hey, we could get up whenever we feel like it.
Yeah.
If that's possible.
Yeah.
But this idea, to work as hard as you work, do you have to set aside like, okay, between these months, I'm not going to do anything but focus on family in order to recharge and then go back in to work?
Yes, definitely. That's one of the lucky things about this career is that making movies is like very intensive 2-3 months. And
yeah.
Then you can take very long time off in between. You know, it's a real luxury and you can kind of be completely immersed. And it's, you know, I remember with friends of mine who were like panicking going back to work after they had their kids. I was like, oh, but mine's not permanent. So like when I go back to work, I know it just lasts for, you know, a few weeks, a
right.
few months, and then I'm back and I can, you know, I can be home all day. And there's just, it's very lucky. I know it's rare.
Well, and I also, but the idea of, you know, when you're at work, you're focusing, you're essentially focusing on yourself, you're focusing on work, you're focusing on all that stuff. And when you're on the press tour, you got to focus on all that stuff. Are you good at sort of packet switching between like, okay, now I can just throw focus onto the kids?
I have to work at it. I think the phone is a really bad part of that because it allows you to feel like you can like work while you're being with the kids, sure. which is a bad idea. So I've tried just – I've been working on like just leaving the phone in another room or not bringing it with me if I'm going out. My husband recently got a flip phone, which is really like a revolution.
Oh my God. He's like retro on purpose so that you can't, he can't be like on the internet or can't rely
exactly.
on it.
Exactly. Which is really good because that's always my panic is like, you want to have a phone now if there's like an emergency because it's not like there are pay phones anymore like on every corner. So if God forbid you need something, you want to have a phone. But,
that's kind of the, that sounds like vinyl for telecom. It's like, oh, I got a flip phone.
Yeah, it is.
Those StarTAC phones were cool. You know, it's like that was when we started going, oh, yeah, it's like it's Star Trek now. Like we have these communicators that we carry around all the time. We take this for granted.
Yes, it's true. It's
but
true.
These don't. We don't. I've been talking to people who have been experimenting with just like taking a few days off.
Yeah.
And they really do feel the first day like. It's like that scene in The Abyss really where there she's choking on the water. And they're like, oh, just breathe. You'll be okay. And then after a day, like, yeah, I don't miss it anymore.
Yeah, and you, I mean, you, time feels very different. And, yeah, your brain gets clear. It really is like there's a drug situation.
There is a psychological drug situation.
A little withdrawal.
Yes, of course. Mm-hmm. And we don't. We don't view it that way because, like, well, we're not putting anything in our body, so it's not. But there is definitely, I have no idea what the long term psychological. And you were a psychology major; you must have, have some idea.
No, but yes, it's a good idea for someone to think about the long and. They don't know now because they've only been around for, what, 10 years?
We have no idea what the long-term effects are going to be, but I'm sure it'll be...
Yikes.
What I worry about is in one generation, it'll be like when we look back at people who worked in asbestos, and we're like, what were they thinking?
Right.
They had those devices near their heads?
Yes.
What? Yeah, that's what So I try not to think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds like a healthy, ignoring reality.
I actually read one of your papers.
No.
I did.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I went back. I looked up your Harvard. I looked up some of the Harvard business.
Oh, God.
Like, oh, my God. It said, oh, you wrote this paper about... it was
object
permanence. Yes, about object permanence. Yeah, where you basically... you put these very safe near-infrared spectroscopies on these babies. And we're like, once a human starts to understand that objects exist permanently outside of when you're looking at them...
Mm-hmm.
What happens in the brain?
Right.
Do you remember what happens in the brain?
There's some frontal lobe activation.
Just a little frontal
lobe
really activation.
This really is Nerdist, isn't it?
I mean, yes. Well, you know.
True to title. I'm excited.
I was fascinated by it. I mean, I didn't understand all of it, but I was pretty fascinated.
Neither did I.
No, come on.
I was definitely like a research assistant for my like TA, you know.
And so what are you doing as a research assistant?
Like putting... Those little kind of electrodes on baby heads, moving the the ball under the blanket or whatever.
That's right.
Yeah, she definitely did the bulk of the statistical analysis.
Yeah, but your name is on a fancy ass paper.
I know, that was cool. That was more generous of her than reality of me doing serious work. But I appreciate it.
Does something like that put it in perspective? Like when you come back to – like when you're studying the psychology of how the brain is formed and how much oxygen goes to the prefrontal cortex, are you – when you go back to work, are you like, oh, okay, acting's acting. It's not that hard or it's not that crazy.
Yeah, no. I mean it certainly makes you very excited about doing like purely kind of creative work. But also definitely gave me – not to be too sort of like serious or – nerdy about it, but like the psychological background definitely gives you little keys for different characters' behaviors. So often characters have sort of disorders or psychological
black swan.
Yeah, exactly. So that, for example, like when I was hanging out with the ballerinas, I was like, oh my God, there's such an obsessive compulsive tendency of people who do the same ritual every day, the same bar, they wrap their shoes. It's like very OCD behavior and perfection seeking. And that was something like the I Just Want to Be Perfect was something that I improvised in a session with Darren. And that all came from sort of like having been exposed to that a little bit.
Oh, wow.
As a student, just reading about OCD behavior and relationship between OCD and anorexia. And that it's actually like a, you know, sort of a, there is a difference in brain function because of that.
Is so. That and what's the nature nurture line between that? Because obviously, especially in that movie, like her mother was had some issues.
Yeah.
And but in general, you know, you find when parents are very controlling and very domineering, and it's like then people can get that can develop that. So what do you think the line
definitely,
is?
Definitely, and also like some people who have those tendencies might be drawn towards professions or interests that you can manifest those kinds of behaviors.
Right.
And that's like actually a really high functioning way to manifest your OCD behavior is
right.
to like become really, really good at art or, like have virtuosic
right.
talent because you will practice it 10,000 times
sure.
until it's perfect,
sure.
you know, as opposed to like washing your hands 10,000 times that like there's high functioning manifestations of the same thing that
sure,
could
sure.
be totally self-destructive.
Yeah, but I think a lot of it also centers, I mean, besides any of the, you know, like the real mental health disorders mm-hmm. that are also a part of it, but also the idea of control, you know, like when people need
yeah.
control, it's almost that kind of superstitious, you know, I have to do this a number of times because
right.
I need to have control. And I feel like I see that more often now because the more information we get about the world, I think the less control people feel like they have.
Right. And also
world.
We've lost so much ritual. Like ritual was so part of our lives. I think through religion, if you see religious ritual, like
sure.
it is that kind of behavior of like doing the same thing every day at a certain time of year, you do certain things.
Right.
You gather with people. This is what you do when someone dies. This is what you do when someone's married. This is what you do when someone's born. And it has all these like coded rules of like ritual. And we have lost that in a large part of our culture has lost that. And so you have to like replace those rituals with other things, and sometimes those other things aren't so healthy.
Do you think we need a certain amount of ritual as human beings?
Definitely. Definitely. I think it's like kind of how – I think it's how our brains work. And I think like that's – you get out of ritual and everything gets undone.
Then you're just outside the dome somewhere in the wastelands.
Exactly. Exactly.
Do you have rituals? Like, do you have rituals that you go like, I know this is dumb, but every time before I start a thing, I have to have this kind of food or do this kind of thing or do that kind of thing?
I have rituals in the way I work of like the kinds of things I do to prepare. I don't relate it to food as much. I mean, except that I have like most humans like have pretty like scheduled eating.
Right,
like
right,
that
right,
is
right.
that is a ritual,
right.
even though it's like doesn't feel like it. And then, I mean, I do, you know, I am a practicing Jew, so I have those rituals
sure.
of my religion, which I don't think are right for everyone, but it does give me a certain kind of structure to your year and structure to your life and
right.
everything that, you know, it does give you this sort of structure to live in.
Right. And so you feel like without that sort of a balance, you just think you wouldn't be able to.
Yeah. I don't think that it's like necessarily that, but I think that everyone needs to find like the right thing for them, whether it's their meditation or their exercise or
sure.
their, you know, whatever that is your ritual. Or, I mean, some people it's like their coffee, you know, like the process of doing something that you do the same process, like every day. I think it's how we evolved.
Have some water, please.
I'm going to have some water.
There's also sparkly crusty. Water if you want sparkly water.
Mm.
If you're in a sparkly water mood.
I'm very good with this. Thank you.
Okay, great. Having started acting so young, did you kind of understand the process of it when you started? Or was it just a feeling of like, I want to do that? And what was the sort of the gap between like, oh, that is actually a lot of work to do that? Or were you a kid who really needed to just dive into something 100%?
I think I was always into diving into it. And it was fun starting as a kid because I feel like it made me feel like it was a game and it was play, which I've gotten to carry over into my adult life, that everyone around me made such a concerted effort to make it fun for me and not like work that it was, I think that carried over into my adult life. And I think that's so important too, because I think like we don't have enough play and like joy and like everything we do that like even calling something work or like, you know, when you have kids at school and you call it like homework, mm-hmm. as opposed to like trying to find joy and curiosity and fulfilling that kind of need in ourselves. And of course, I mean, I have the luxury of having that type of job too, that is innately creative and much more obviously fun than a lot of other jobs. So I acknowledge that, but it's true that like, it feels like everything we do, whether it's, you know, the exercise we do or the, you know, the time that we spend with each other, or, you know, that if you can find like the silly and like the joy and the creativity in it, it's like a lot more, it just makes life a lot nicer.
I think people would, you know, in general, the feeling that I get is like when people think about you, they go, she's got it together.
Thanks.
You know, she's great acting. She can rap.
That's
you know, direct.
Very nice. I don't feel that way about myself at all. Well, see, I mainly feel like everything's falling apart all the time. But
that's really interesting for people to hear, because I think most people feel that. And, you know, we live, I think, just another sort of ritualistic behavior is comparative thinking, where you look at other people, because, you know, sometimes what other guide do we have than wherever we are in proximity to where other people are, which is dangerous also. But I think it's nice for people to hear like, hey, I don't know, you know, I don't always know what I'm doing.
Well, I feel like what I've observed, because, you know, the work-life balance conversation is so annoying to have, because it does feel like uniquely like targeted at working mothers and whatever, but it is an issue. Like it is an issue. It is something that we all deal with. And a lot of working parents do, a lot of working dads do too. But for women who work, observing my friends, the ones who seem to be able to do it both are the ones most comfortable with being kind of a mess. Like the ones who want to be really perfect at what they do are the ones who either choose not to have kids and just do their job, or the ones who choose to, I mean, this is a gross generalization, but the ones who choose to be at home with their children, I feel like it's because they want, like what I get from them is that they don't want to be anything less than 100%.
And sure.
To be able to do everything, or to try to do everything and not even be able to, but even you have to be comfortable with failing a lot. And that's why I'm always like, I really admire people who do one or the other, because I'm like, oh, you're like committed 100% and like are gonna like, you work, you know, you don't, you have a real commitment to doing what you do, like totally right.
That's really cool.
And doing everything, you're just kind of like, I'm a mess all the time. Like I always have like avocado on my shirt, or like, you know, like I've gone into so many meetings with like my shirt unbuttoned because I've like just been breastfeeding right before I go to a meeting. And like, I'm tired. I like mess things up all the time because I'm so tired. I say things wrong. I make mistakes. I'm falling on my face. I'm not with my kids enough. I'm not doing my job well enough, like as, you know, completely as I could, but I'm kind of comfortable with it.
Well, that's
and
great.
I think that's kind of the secret for me is like, you know, I'm trying my best and like, I forgive myself.
Well, that's important. I think that's really important, because I think, you know, the types of role models that I think people normally think of are these sort of two-dimensional models of perfection. Oh, this person. But I think the better role models are like, the better role models have flaws, and they embrace their flaws, because, you know, the flaws make us unique.
Well, I think it's all about just knowing yourself too, and that like you yourself, like what you're comfortable with, mm-hmm. you know, like if you can be comfortable with all that, then great. If you are comfortable only if you're like there for everything at home, like then that's like the hardest thing and the most, I mean, astonishing thing. And some people are incredible at it. And some people are, you know that they're like most comfortable being fully at work. And that's, it's like just knowing yourself and what you're comfortable with for me.
I'm reading this really interesting book called Ego is the Enemy. Hmm. And the whole idea is that, you know, all ego pursuits essentially lead to a very destructive place.
It's interesting.
That it's just this idea, the reason I bring it up is it sort of ties in that idea of pursuing perfection and having to be perfect and having mm-hmm. to be so rigid that's, you know, not that you shouldn't try to do better, but it really is more about, you know, having a purpose, a bigger purpose rather than just, you know, like, I want to do this because it'll feel really good and then I'll be happy. Like,
right.
Because that never works.
But it's knowing yourself too, because if that's what makes you like have joy is to be like, you know, spending all, you know, having your focus in one place, or like feeling like you are doing the best possible that you can, or like, you know, I think everyone, I don't know, everyone's different. Like if anything, I feel like you just like need to like accept everyone's difference and like celebrate everyone's difference is like the, because everyone has something different that's right for them. And that's, it's almost like not possible to like share advice.
Right. You know, yeah, well, sure, because you only have your perspective and you can't, but also, you know, it's such a strange time mm-hmm. to be kind of a public entity, just because especially the internet is just waiting to point out flaws or things they like, or, you know, it's such a strange time that I think you really, if your whole kind of MO is like, hey, I'm not perfect, everyone. I'm going to fuck up sometimes. Then people go, okay, well, you know, all right.
Well, it's like the most public, but it's also kind of the least public, because it's like people will comment about everything, but it also lasts for like a fraction of a second. And
right.
there's so much that almost everything that's said becomes like invisible. So like,
did you ever toy with kind of, you know, leading a digital life, or were you like, yeah, I don't need any of that stuff?
Yeah, I've always kind of been apart from it because of that sort of like public, you know, wanting to keep privacy and stuff. And now it feels like I'm saying, like almost not that big of a deal, because there's just so much out there. It's
right.
like, I'm not like, oh, if I'm out there, then I'm going to lose all my privacy. It used to be such a different world. Like
sure.
how you put yourself out there, you know, would really, really impact things.
Right. But I also feel like, some people do get chased down by paparazzi. They do. It's like, oh, they, you know, in a hotel window, they got to pick.
Right.
But I feel like there is a large percentage of people who kind of start that machine,
yes.
and then it gets out of control and they can't stop. And they're like, what did I do?
Right.
But I think in general, I think most people who like lay low and don't do anything crazy are just not that interesting to the, it's like, you're not going to get bothered too much. It's like, yeah, they don't really ever do anything crazy. So that's not a news story we can get.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's, I don't know. There's definitely disproportionate energy around women and women with children,
sure.
and pregnant women.
Sure.
I definitely like never really had a big problem except when I was pregnant and when I started having kids, then there's like this whole explosion of energy that doesn't feel asked for. And talking to other actresses now, it seems to be like common
sure.
that it sort of like clusters around that, which is just definitely disturbing.
Is this like they want pictures of you pregnant, or pictures of the kids, or pictures of
yeah.
the
yeah, which has calmed down a little bit since the kid stuff has calmed down since the major publications stopped buying pictures of kids.
Right.
But still happens.
God, it's so crazy because it, you know, on the one hand, you're like, well, these publications are being irresponsible. On the other hand, you go, because people buy it.
Right.
You know, it's like, right. I don't think people realize, they just go,
someone,
oh, I just bought one magazine.
Me that there's like a term for that, though, of like things that people buy, but if they weren't on the market, that they wouldn't, no one would be like, I wish I had a, you know, like just like not like consumer goods that aren't
right
obvious necessities that like have to exist for anyone to have an appetite for.
Do you know
them.
What that is? Do you know what that is?
What's it called?
That's object permanence.
Yeah, exactly. Full circle. Exactly.
There's no object permanence exists for tabloid pregnancy exactly. pictures. If they're not there, people don't know that they're not there.
Exactly.
That's all it is.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know. Well, I think, you know, I think individual consumers don't realize because they just think of themselves as a singular unit. It's like, well, it's a big deal. I just bought this one magazine.
Right.
Like, yeah, but times you by like 300 million people,
right?
You know,
well, all of us, I mean, I think all of us participate in something like that, whether it's like, oh, you know, what's it gonna impact, but I, you know, left the lights on,
right?
You know, whatever,
right?
And then you're like, oh wait, I am part of a huge number of people, all have an impact.
Yeah. Do you have like a weird guilty pleasure? Is like a TV show or like a weird? Top Chef. That's a good show.
It's a great show.
I don't think it's
so guilty, but I'm just like, I'm a real, like I really get so excited when there's a new episode and it's like hard for me when they go on hiatus.
Have you ever been on the show?
I've been on the show.
You have been on the mm-hmm. show.
Yep.
What'd you do? I'm
of
sorry.
Of course,
I did
a vegan episode.
Of course.
And chefs hated me. It was especially cruel because
so zero like, pork fat. Yeah, it's vegan. Yeah. Zero pork fat.
Yeah. It was. Yeah, they made it especially difficult because they took them to a steakhouse. So they all thought they were doing like a steak challenge, and they're like, "And you got to make something vegan."
What'd you make?
I didn't make anything. They fed me a lot and I ate a lot, which was great.
It was good?
Yeah, it was great.
Good. I feel like now in 2018, it's a lot easier to support a vegetarian or vegan lifestyle on the road than it used to be.
Especially in LA, I mean here. But yeah, on the road, interesting.
What do you snack on?
What do I snack on? I don't know that. I mean, I have like my like restaurants that I go to. If it's like a place that doesn't have a lot of like vegan, well, I don't go to like vegan vegetarian restaurants that often, although in LA there's amazing ones like
sure.
Crossroads,
right?
And even like, you know, good like kind of takeout places like M Cafe and By Chloe, and New York is starting to have better options, but I always go like ethnic because I feel like if you go, you can always get something good at like Indian place or Italian
sure.
place or Japanese.
Ethiopian's like, good too.
Ethiopian
vegetarian
very, very
dishes
delicious.
Amazing. Have you been to Sage?
Yeah, Sage is really good. They have a vegan Reuben that I really enjoy.
Now, is it weird? Because I feel like veganism has so many different sects of like, well, this is okay and that's not okay and that's okay. Do some people say like, only a true vegan eats food that's not copying a meat product?
Oh.
Is like there's some kind of weird.
Oh, really? Oh, I haven't heard that one before.
I'm just guessing.
I mean, the only one that I feel like is like honey. Honey is sort of always the. Are you a vegan with honey or are you vegan without honey?
Right. I know both, by the
this
way.
This is not necessarily the most fascinating topic. Sorry.
No, it is. The reason
like
is
really interesting.
I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why I think it's interesting because I think, you know, the older I get, that, you know, sort of in the future, my wife has a weird disorder where she actually can't, if she eats too many vegetables, she gets ridiculous kidney stones.
Oh, no.
So she actually has to eat, like, she has a thing where she actually has to eat meat. And so, which is fine because she enjoys it. But I think like, you know, because a lot of guys that I know that are a bit older that are vegetarian, they look great.
Yeah.
So I'm always kind of like, I wonder. So I always poke around.
Actually, our whole stunt team on Annihilation were all vegans and they were like the most like ripped athletic people. And they were all, and they also did all the stuff on Thor and they were like, oh yeah, all of us are going vegan. Like we're all hardcore that it's like the highest performance. So definitely possible and definitely good for you.
it seems to be healthy. I don't know. I'm trying to do in moderation. Like maybe every meal doesn't have to be meat. Maybe some of it can be vegetarian.
Again, it's like knowing yourself, knowing what makes you feel good. And I think everyone has different things that are right for their body. And I think if you're like in tune enough, you can figure out what it is that makes you feel good.
Do you think at this point, like, yeah, I know who I am, or do you feel like, oh, I still got a lot of runway to figure that out?
Oh, I feel like I'm always figuring stuff out, but it definitely feels like different than 10 years ago, or, you know, definitely have more self-knowledge than then. I feel like I'm hopefully getting closer, but hopefully it's a, you know, lifelong pursuit.
Well, that was great about doing an updated rap was just sort of bookending, like, this is like these very prominent years in your life between like 06 maybe and now. And it was kind of an interesting way to sort of to bookend that stuff. I mean, do you really feel like the last 12 years were, do you feel like they just sort of rushed by? What do you feel like you really absorbed from the last 12 years?
It was a shock to like figure out that it had been 12 years since I had done Saturday Night Live, because it felt like yesterday. I mean, you really like become an old person when you start being like, wow, time just flying by. I remember when I was, you know, young and spry. Yeah, I mean, it feels both. I mean, the years have definitely like been full of activity, and you're just kind of nonstop. Like once you start having kids, it's like you don't like. I feel like the time that you used to. I wonder, like, what did I do with all those hours in the day, like that I used to have? Because you're just so busy all the time. Like it's just like getting. You know, it's very fulfilling, kind of like doing everything. You feel so accomplished during the day after like you've been like, and I fed them and I dress them and I take them to their, you know, things and we play and we do this and I did some work and then I come back and, you know, and you feel your days are so, so full. So there's a lot, but it also feels like, wait a minute, that was more than a decade ago. That's crazy. Like time definitely feels exponentially faster, is, you know, that's what old people say.
My dad always used to say that. He was like, the years feel like months and the months feel like days. I'm like, shut up, old man. And I'm like, god damn it.
He was right.
He was 100% right.
Well said. 2018
already. But it also, when you have a little perspective behind you, it's kind of nice because you can look back at everything you stressed about and everything you thought the world was going to come crashing down upon you, every little thing. You go, oh yeah, none of that. Everything's fine. Everything's, you know.
Oh yeah.
It always kind of feels, kind of going back to your thing about being comfortable being a mess. Like, it's all right.
Yeah. You have to definitely be comfortable within the discomfort, be comfortable within the like anxiety and the worry and the all of that, because it's the only way you can kind of make it through.
Did you like doing live television, or is it terrifying?
Oh, it's such a rush. And they have such a system that it's like they've figured it out. They've had time to like kind of get their system down, and it's a real rush to kind of be thrown into it. But yeah, it works. I mean, the way they do it, it's really, really fun.
Were you promoting V for Vendetta the first time you were on?
Yeah.
That movie holds up, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
It's a great movie, and I think, you know, particularly the more we progress in our culture and we look back at sort of like revolution and, you know, that idea of, you know, being oppressed. I mean, it's such a powerful movie. Your characters are all very committed. They're very committed to whatever their cause is. Was that something when you did the movie, was that something that you felt like, oh, I kind of want to make this statement? Or did it just seem like, oh, I like this character and it seems like it'd be a fun movie to do?
Well, for me, it was really, really like something I had thought about and was thinking about a lot, was like, what is this sort of line between a freedom fighter and a terrorist? And it was really interesting to get to kind of dive into that, like, you know, that different, the same person can be defined differently depending on the beholder.
Sure.
And And that was really exciting to get to play. And yeah, I guess I'm kind of extreme as a person. Like, I kind of go all in when I'm in, and I'm all out when I'm out. And it was definitely a lucky character to get to play, because she's all in.
How do you know, like, when you know, because I'm sure you get a lot of scripts, and what has to align for you to go, oh, I think I can, like, there's something chewy about this that I can get into.
It's something different every time, but, you know, a lot of it has to do with the director, because I feel like it's a very social experience making a film, and the creation is very social. I mean, it's completely unlike someone painting by themselves or writing a novel by themselves.
Sure.
Or, you know, playing guitar at home by themselves, although it might be more akin to, like, playing in a band or playing in an orchestra, that, like, you're really, the creation depends on all of the people around you and how in tune you are with each other and how connected you are and how you communicate. And so the director and the other creative people involved in the movie, but especially the director, is very, very central. And mm-hmm. if you feel like you can have a good communication and that they're an interesting leader and artist and open, that is kind of the greatest thing. And then if you also obviously have, like, a great script, an interesting character, something that you're particularly interested in, or that brings out a part of you or exposes you to a world that you never thought you'd get to be part of.
Right.
Those are all, like, also considerations. And now there's, like, practical logistical concerns too, of, like, does this fit in with my kid's school schedule?
Of course, like, of course.
Does it shoot in LA?
Right.
Like, there's not a lot of, like, going to Bulgaria for 5 months anymore.
Right,
you know?
Right, right. But do you kind of trust your gut when you're working, or do you look to the director? Because, you know, obviously the director's sort of the grand orchestrator, and they, a lot of times, I assume, have a vision that you don't, you probably know, but you can't exactly see what's in their head.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, like, great directors are good communicators to help you fulfill their vision, whether they're telling you all of the details or whether they're telling you, like, what you need to know in mm-hmm. order to do what they need. And yeah, I work on instinct, but you also, that's the other thing, the reason you have to be so comfortable with the director is because you pretty much have to do anything they ask you within
right.
reason. And you want to be ready to do that and not, you know, you never want to have, like, a difference that you're not willing to do something that would, you know, help create their vision.
Sure.
But obviously within reason, like, you know, if they ask you to do something dangerous or they ask you to do something, like, you know, obviously that you're not physically comfortable with or whatever, I would say no, but, like, you try and kind of clear that up before it starts.
Right.
Figure that all out before it starts, that you can then go in and commit 150%.
Right. And with Annihilation, were you, because that's an, I feel like there's a metaphor in this movie. I did get to see it. I feel like there's a metaphor in there of, like, you know, sort of losing yourself a bit, being caught up. The character is obviously, and I'm trying to talk around it just because.
Yeah, you don't want to, like, spoil.
You don't want to spoil anything, and it's also, it's a, how would you describe the movie? Because it's a really interesting and complex world that these characters walk into the, I don't even want to say what it's called, but when they walk into this area.
Yeah, well, there's this area that's undergoing this environmental phenomenon that no one really understands, and everything that's going in is not coming out. And my character, her husband, goes in and comes out scathed, and she goes in with a group of scientists, a group of all female scientists, where they go and try and figure out what this phenomenon is. But of course, it's much more complicated than that, because it's got this, like, psychological thriller element where what they're facing inside themselves is kind of like the forces terrorizing them
right.
on the outside. So it's kind of like my favorite kind of thriller is when it's all sort of it's like the what's going on inside you is externalized.
And did you do you kind of look at stuff and go, oh, you know, I think I want to do like a sci-fi thing next, or I think I want to do that, because you're in a lot of universes now.
Yeah,
you're in a Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
You're in a Marvel universe.
Yeah, that's
now,
true.
You know, it's like do you kind of look at stuff that way?
I don't really look at it strategically like that. You know, it's more just, you know, Alex Garland sent me a really interesting script, and he's a really interesting person to work with. You know, but that it wasn't like a genre decision.
Right. And do you watch sci-fi stuff on your own?
Sometimes, not like, it's not really, I wouldn't say anything's my genre right now, because I usually am like asleep at 9 p.m.
Oh, yeah, us too. Oh, it's great. Like, yeah, we're in bed by 9.
Yeah.
Unless we have to go out to something.
Yeah.
But being in bed's great.
There's a lot of trying to take advantage of any sleeping opportunities.
Do you still field a lot of Star Wars questions? Or are you like,
I don't that much anymore, except, you know, asking about the new films and like if any of those characters from the prequels are going to be revived or anything.
Right.
That's kind of the, if I get asked, it's usually about that, but I don't really have news about any of that. So it becomes kind of, yeah.
You should just start saying, yeah. And then
yeah,
just walk away.
I know,
and they
exactly.
go, wait, what was that?
Exactly. Yeah.
You're
totally.
In a good position to really screw with people.
That's true.
In a great way.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. There's actually a whole, yeah.
There's a whole like.
There's a whole thing, but I'm not really allowed to talk
yeah,
about
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Don't worry about it. It's just like, I'm an old prequel star, but don't worry about it. It's like, whatever.
Exactly. I'm not really allowed to say anything.
Is that a lot of white face makeup that you've brought with you?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's crazy.
Because I'm actually going from here to shoot.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Oh, that's great. Well, I'm so glad that we were able to.
I know.
We were able to break this huge story that is. One site's going to be like, she said it. It's totally going to happen. That was really nice of you to swing by and do this, by the way,
in the middle of that. My pleasure.
I want to sort of talk about, as we're sort of winding this down, like, what kind of, I've been asking people lately, like, what brings them joy? And it can be anything, because I think it is important to remind people that the world is not 100% of this kind of toxic bubble that it feels like it is, because we're just being assaulted with so much awful news and tragedy and horrible things. And so I feel like I my wife always says happiness, you know, it is a choice, you
yes.
know, and it is easy to not choose it. And so, you know, sometimes yeah. I like to say, like, you know, if you're choosing happiness, like, what are some things that you're joyful about at the moment?
Well, definitely family all the time, just not all the time. Cause of course there's moments that are more challenging than others, but, It's pretty remarkable to get to like just sit with each other, play with each other, you know, spend time together is pretty amazing. Anything we do in nature, like being outside, that's one of the things that's so lucky here in LA that we can like kind of year round be, you know, walking around trees and beaches and
it's really cold though, 67 degrees,
freezing.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I'm
freezing.
Wearing a sweater.
Yeah.
It's freezing.
So yeah, anything in that world is great. And I've been dancing a lot, which is really
fun. What kind of dancing are you doing?
Well, I mean, I'm prepping for a film where I play like a pop star,
uh-huh.
which is kind of exciting.
See, I'm an prequel story.
Yeah.
She's like a space Britney Spears.
Exactly. So I've been doing a lot of that, and that's been really fun. I feel like I need to find more time to just like dance.
Yeah.
Non-work life. And I've been reading Rebecca Solnit recently.
Okay.
I've been making my way through her books, and that's been mind blowing and life affirming and beautiful. And just, my husband got into it too. And so now we're just like reading.
Tell me about it. I'm not that familiar. Please tell me about it.
She is a great, nonfiction writer, and she's written books about everything from how to have hope in dark times. She's written about wandering, like an entire book about the value of wandering. Mm-hmm. She's written a lot of feminist essays. She wrote Men Explain Things to Me, which sort of has been credited with coming up with the term mansplaining.
Yep.
And she's just like a great mind, and everything she writes on all these different topics, and everything she writes is like, just really kind of expanding and hopeful and, yeah, just like making you aware of things that you should be aware of. And
that's great.
About things that you want to think about.
I mean, I tend to just like put like an audiobook in my, cause we spend so much time in our car in Los Angeles. So I think that might be next up on the list.
Oh,
I like hopeful, wise tales.
I cannot, recommend her more. It's definitely been like a revelation this year.
Is there anything in particular that you are still kind of aching to do? Where you go, I got to do this movie, I got to do this movie, and then I got to be a mom for a while, but I still want to do this thing.
Just travel. Like I'm really, really love being in new places. I love going to new places. So there's so many places I haven't been, and that's always what I want to do. Like as soon as I have any time. Yeah. And that's not, I mean, that's always like with family.
Sure.
So it's not separate from that.
Do you think there's ever a time where you're like, well, we're going to take a vacation and just leave the kids at home just for, or.
We talk about it. We're like, we know people do that. We've heard that that is a thing that is acceptable, but, yeah, we haven't done that yet.
Not just yet. Well, it was like one, right? You have a child that's like 1 year.
Yeah, she's turning one next week.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, not yet, but at a certain point.
And also, I don't know, it's really fun. Like, I think we'd miss them so
I know,
much
yeah,
that
I
it
hear
would
that
almost,
too.
Like, not be fun.
Yeah, I hear that, too. There's, like, a minute where you're like, hey, we get to sleep in, and then, aw.
Yeah, yeah. And it's also this, like, I mean, we've had, like, by ourselves, like work things where we have to be gone for like a couple days or something. I mean, I haven't done it yet with my daughter, but I had done it with, you know, when my son was a little bit older, before I had my daughter. And you like get so excited that you're gonna like sleep in, and then you like can't.
Right.
It's like it's so depressing when you're like, oh, I've lost the ability to like sleep into the, you know.
Your body's kind of like, working against you at that point.
Your
like,
body's just wired in a new way that you're like, oh, well then I miss them and I can't sleep in. Maybe we should just all travel together and forget about it.
So maybe just as we're sort of wrapping this up, just some nice piece of advice for someone who, you know, who you have said like, well, I'm comfortable being a mess. But something some piece of advice for people about, you know, focus or pursuing something that they are excited about or being able to stay on point when they maybe feel like they're teetering off. For someone who has accomplished so much, and you're really good at a lot of stuff.
Thanks,
so
that's nice, but
it's if you don't feel that way, it certainly seems that way.
Yeah, I don't feel that way, but I mean maybe that's part of it. Like maybe the maybe it really is just about being like, it's normal to like, it's normal to feel insecure. It's normal to feel embarrassed. It's normal to be afraid, but then you want to operate as if you're not, you know, it's like acknowledge that it's okay that you're feeling these things and then be like, and now I'm just going to operate as if I'm not embarrassed and I'm not afraid and I'm not insecure. And I don't always succeed at that, but I feel like the few times that I have felt that I've like broken through my own kind of expectations for myself have been when I've been able to like really shed those things. And it's not that they don't exist. It's not like I'm like, don't be embarrassed, don't be afraid, because that's impossible, because it's just, you can't control whether you are like,
right.
Sometimes you're, but like, that's when I find personally I can like do the best version of what I do is like by trying to leave those things on the side.
And do you feel like because your, because Portman is your maternal grandmother's last name, mm-hmm. yes, and your real last name is different, mm-hmm. and so do you see them as two different entities? Were you able to go into like Natalie Portman mode?
Yeah, it's interesting that I do feel like I really compartmentalized that, and I don't know if that's like so unhealthy that I like have kind of had like these two identities, but I felt that it was really helpful for me in school, like. When I was in high school, I used to get like really upset if people called me Portman at school. I like wanted my like other last name, because I think there was sort of like, this is the part of me that's private, and this is the part of me that who's really me, and then the public me is like this other thing. And I think as an adult, I felt more comfortable kind of integrating that, because when you're still developing your sense of self, which is obviously a much more dramatic process when you're younger, like mm-hmm. We were talking about before, like we'll continue changing for ever, hopefully, but I do have more of a sense of who I am now. It can be really hard and destructive when the public you is like this other thing.
Right.
And so to just kind of separate it and be like, that's not me, that's something else, is helpful to like get to make the mistakes and fall on your face and behave in ways that you're like, oh wait, that's not who I am, and
right.
change it and self-correct and have that whole process and have that be like separate and out of that world. And I don't know, I guess now that I feel a little bit more settled in like who I know I am, it's not as like scary to have this other version, public version that kind of doesn't belong to me,
right,
out there,
right.
You know, that I'm like, oh yeah, that exists, and it's not like a threat to who I am.
Well, I just wonder if for people who are afraid, like personally afraid to take chances or take risks, if they can sort of like without getting too unhealthy.
Ego.
Yeah, just sort of a.
Well,
you know.
I think about that all the time because I'm also obsessed with the writer Elena Ferrante.
Uh huh.
And have you ever read her?
No, she's the second recommendation.
Like, she's just like the greatest novelist alive right now. I mean, she's just writes the best stuff, but she. Her name is a complete pseudonym, and she has completely hidden her identity. And because of her popularity, people have tried to like figure out, and some people have. I won't read any of the articles that
you
are like who she is. But I think it's because of taking on that persona, she's so able to be like so honest in her work.
Sure.
Because it's like you don't have the consequences for revealing that like depth of humanity and that depth of truth.
That's where the authenticity comes from and the honesty comes from.
Yeah. Yeah, that she has that freedom because she's not revealing who she is. And there's a lot to be said for that.
Well, I can't thank you enough for coming and chatting before you're going to do Kimmel, who's awesome.
Thanks.
But so Annihilation is February 23rd?
Yes.
Is this correct? And you can also read Natalie's work in Frontal Lobe Activation with Object Permanence, which is a quick read.
It's a delightful read, I'm sure.
Is there anything else you want to promote while you're here?
No, just Annihilation. Please see it, enjoy, talk to each other, tell me what you think about it, because it is a mind-blowing experience.
And be nice to each other.
And be kind, yes.
Be kind. All right, enjoy your burrito, everyone.
All
Thanks,
right.
Natalie.
Thank you.
Thank you.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.
Every year, 50 teenage girls, one from every state, show up in Mobile, Alabama to compete in the largest cash scholarship competition exclusively for high school girls. They spend months training to win the big prize. But what happens when a Supreme Court decision leaves many of them feeling unprepared for the real world?
A lot of the girls were crying, and I never seen any of them cry before.
From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. I'm your host, Shima Oliai. Follow me behind the scenes as all 50 girls are catapulted into the center of a nationwide debate about their rights. What do they think of their changing country? Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.